Hi, I'm Cheryl Paul, and welcome to this teleclass called What Nobody Tells You to Expect When You're Expecting, and From Preconception Through the First Year. You are in the right place if you want to learn how to create the healthiest environment in which to birth yourself as a mother, no matter what stage of this transition you're in. Creating a healthy internal environment begins with one simple action: checking in with your expectations and seeing if you can bring your unrealistic expectations into alignment with reality. The vast majority of women struggle at each stage, whether they're trying to conceive, you're pregnant, you're giving birth, you're a new mother, because your expectations don't match the reality and you're left wondering, what's wrong with me? Maybe I'm not cut out to be a mother. What's wrong with my relationship? What's wrong with my baby? So I want to just tell you right off the bat that if you're struggling with trying to conceive, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. If you're struggling through pregnancy and not enjoying it like you thought you quote-unquote should, there's nothing wrong with you. If your birth was nothing like how you expected it to be, if you felt traumatized by it, even if it was a, you know, so-called healthy, normal birth, there's nothing wrong with you. And if you're a new mother and you're struggling with breastfeeding, sleep, depression, bonding with your baby, there's nothing wrong with you. And we will get into all of those into more detail in just a few minutes. I want to just start by introducing myself a little bit further. Many of you on the call today are my clients and have gone through my home study programs. But for those of you who don't know me, let me introduce myself. I'm originally from Los Angeles, and I now live in Boulder, Colorado, with my husband and my two sons. My older son is Everest. He is 7, just turned 7, and my little one is Asher, and he's 2.5. And from as far back as I can remember, I've been passionate about transitions. I've always longed for meaning and guidance around the turning points of our lives: becoming an adolescent, graduating from high school and then college, getting married, becoming a mother, and so on. This passion led me to write my master's thesis for my degree in counseling psychology on the transition of getting married, and this thesis then evolved into my first book, The Conscious Bride. The Conscious Bride filled a gaping hole in our culture about what women are really feeling as they prepare to transition from single to wife. And I've been very lucky to have appeared several times on Oprah, as well as on Good Morning America, in Brides Magazine, The Washington Post, and the San Francisco Chronicle. My work centers around a very simple yet reassuring concept, which is that as much as we think we want to hold on to our fantasies of the perfect life, the perfect wedding, the perfect marriage, the perfect house, the perfect pregnancy, we take great relief when someone blows the whistle on the taboo against telling the truth, and we realize that everyone else struggles just like we do. So that's what we're here to do today, to take the most popular pregnancy book on the market, What to Expect When You're Expecting, which everybody runs out and buys the moment they get pregnant, but which is actually responsible for setting up massive amounts of unrealistic expectations, which then turns into a lot of anxiety, and turning that on its head. When I was trying to conceive many years ago, 8 years ago, I longed for information that would help me contextualize my fears, my sense of loss, my anxiety, my ambivalence, and there was nothing available at that time. But I've spent the last 8 years creating this mentoring and guidance program to fill the gap around becoming a mother, just as I did with my work with Conscious Weddings. So where most women chart their fertility and their pregnancy symptoms, I was charting my inner world, as well as the inner world of hundreds of women navigating through this transition. We'll be talking a lot about this information today, and if you decide that you want to deepen your process and allow me to take you by the hand and walk you through each stage of your transition, I will show you how to take the next step with my Birthing a New Mother home study course. So let's dive in. I have here today with me three of my favorite women in the world, all of whom are both dear friends and colleagues, and all of whom appear at least once in my Birthing a New Mother home study course as guides. I will introduce all of them right now, and then we will dive into excavating the gold that each of these extraordinary women has to offer. I will start with Carrie Deneau. Carrie is a licensed marriage and family therapist with a practice in Los Angeles. Carrie and I met in graduate school in 1995 and have been soul sisters ever since. She appears in lessons 1 and 2 of the Home Study Program, discussing her expertise with mind-body fertility, as well as using mindfulness for managing the challenges of this transition. Welcome, Carrie. And if you could offer your website now to allow those that are online to get a visual of you and see a little bit what you're about, that would be great.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for having me. My website is carriedeneaucounseling.com.
Great. And it's a beautiful site. Please take some time to check that out when you can focus on it. And next we have Brandy Ferner, who is a childbirth educator and birthing from within instructor. Brandy also has a passion for the process of trying to conceive following her 18-month struggle, and she appears in the Birthing a New Mother Home Study Program in Lesson 2 in a video interview where we discussed that journey, which also births one of her sites, tlcfortc.com. Welcome, Brandy, and if you can mention your other site as well, that would help people to place you.
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Cheryl, for having me. My other site is www.mothernurturedenver.com.
Great. Wonderful. And finally, we have Jessica Williams on the call. Jessica is a parenting coach and founder of Love Parenting LA. Jessica and I met in elementary school when we were 8 years old, and we actually couldn't stand each other. We became best friends when we were 12. And I mention that because when I gave birth to Everest, my first son, I had a sneaking suspicion that I wouldn't bond with him right away because of my history with several of my deepest connections in my life, Jessica being one of them, where my initial response was aversion. So it's a great taboo to admit when you don't bond right away with your baby, and being able to mentally prepare for that helped a bit. It was still challenging for me, but it helped temper that anxiety a bit when that indeed was the case. So we'll get into more of that in a little while, but for now, welcome, Jessica, and please mention your wonderful site as well.
Thank you, Cheryl, and welcome, everyone. My website is www.loveparentingla.com.
Great. So now let's dive into the juice of today's class, and I want to encourage those of you who are listening to stay to the end so you have an opportunity to ask your questions for our wonderful guides here today. You can also submit the questions in the box online, and we have several already. If there's any that are pressing, please make sure to do that. So we are going to start at the beginning with the process of preconception with Carrie Deneau. I will be asking all of our experts/guides, whatever we want to call ourselves, the same question. So, Carrie, one of the predictors of anxiety and depression during transitions is having unrealistic or realistic expectations. Our culture sets us up for so many false expectations, and when it comes to trying to conceive and fertility, most women have some idea about what the process is going to be like. They have some fantasy or some image of what it's going to be like. What do you think the dominant messages our culture transmits regarding the process of trying to conceive are, and how can we bring those expectations into closer alignment with reality? In other words, what's a more realistic expectation for women and their partners to have about conception and fertility?
Messages, many of them. The media, I think that the media and Western medicine's inclination is to depict women over 35. It's actually starting to get younger than that, but let's just say 35, who want babies as being caught up in this biological clock panic. Mm-hmm. And they're being told that their wombs are too old to work. And I think that this undermines the confidence and the emotional health of so many women in our culture concerning their fertility. I mean, these messages are instilling so much fear.
Yeah.
And the fear is happening to these women who are in their 20s and their 30s, and the fear is telling them that they're supposed to have families when they may not be ready to do that. Mm-hmm. And by the time they're in their 40s, I mean, many of these women come to me feeling devastated at being told that their eggs are too old or that there's a problem with them if they're not pregnant within the accepted 6 to 12 month range.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is that if women are thinking or they're convinced that they're too old, that there's a problem, that there's little hope, if that this is going to reflect negatively in their bodies. I mean, contrary to what everybody believes in the medical world, fertility is not really just determined by a woman's age or the number and quality of a person's eggs alone. Stress plays a huge part in infertility. And I think a more realistic expectation is to see that this process is so individualized, and it may not happen as quickly as one hopes, but this does not mean that there's a problem necessarily. I mean, fertility is a lifelong relationship with oneself, regardless of your age and whether you actually end up birthing a child. And I think, you know, the healing journey to become pregnant and to carry to term and birthing a baby is such an incredible opportunity to identify repressed emotions that may be inhibiting a person's ability to conceive. I mean, I have experienced so many people that I'm clear that there is a mind-body interconnection. And whether or not our conscious mind is aware of what we are feeling, our bodies register every moment of our past and our present lives. And this influences us greatly.
And so just to let people know who are on the line or listening to this recording later, a little bit about your story and how old you were when you got pregnant.
I had been trying to get pregnant for 2 years. But interestingly enough, I had read about this woman, Naravi Payne, many, many years earlier. I think I was maybe 30 years old, and I had read, she's a person who created this program called the Whole Person Fertility Program. And when I had read about her, I had circled her name. I just had this feeling I was going to work with her. I was so interested in the way that she was addressing fertility. So many, many years later, I'm trying to get pregnant, and I would say it took me a year on my own, and then I contacted her, and I worked with her for a year. So I got pregnant at 40, and I gave birth at 41.
Fantastic. And Carrie and I go into quite a bit of depth in a very rich and meaningful video interview in the Birthing a New Mother Home Study course, where we really go break it down. What does this mind-body fertility connection mean? What does that look like? How do you work with that? What are the thoughts and beliefs and family patterns that affect one's fertility process? Thank you. Thank you very much, Carrie. Brandy, I'm wondering if you have anything you'd like to chime in, because I know fertility and trying to conceive is a passion of yours as well.
Yes, I feel like I feel like I went through all three. I went through the preconception, pregnancy, and then birth. I feel like I went through the ringer a little bit.
Yes.
So it's interesting that I feel like I can speak to a couple of them, but I loved what you said about that. I think you're right on, and I think, you know, this idea when we hear, when we're trying to get pregnant, we hear somebody say stress, it's like we almost, for me personally, like I almost want to strangle that person, because I'm like, but what does that mean? You know, like stress, like what I feel like is how many people out there have been stressed but gotten pregnant? And then what I like what you talked about was when you look at that deeper, you know, stress doesn't necessarily just look like, oh, I'm at work all day and I'm trying to get a deadline. Stress can look like a blockage in a certain area of your life, maybe a perfectionism in a certain area, a desperation, an expectation, anxiety about, you know, why is this not happening for me? So I think it's important to know that those two things are like this kind of the same thing. And I don't know, it's kind of helpful to know, because it can be an immediate gut reaction to say, but I'm not stressed. But then if you really take a step back and assess and kind of see where you're at with things, people might see, okay, well, I don't feel stressed in the typical definition of stress. But yeah, I do feel a little bit like I'm failing at this, or I do have anxiety, or I do just want this so bad. So I think, you know, it's important and great what you did, Carrie, too, to talk about, you know, how that might look, different ways that might look.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. And Jessica, I know you might have something you want to pipe in as well, and if not, that's fine.
Yeah, I was going to share just a personal anecdote, which was when I was trying to conceive my first child, and the months started to go by where I wasn't conceiving, it was causing a lot of stress, and I would be in my regular activity, and all I could think of was that I had my period, and I did not want my period, and it was devastating and hard to function in work and in relation, and people ask how you are, and it's a man that you don't want to talk about how you are, and my cycle seemed to get longer and longer, and I'm sure it was stress-induced. I went from 28 days to 31 to a 37-day cycle, you know, just taking forever to ovulate. And I was so embarrassed that my body was now taking longer, and I'm such an optimistic person by nature, and I'm so upbeat. It was really challenging for me to have this experience of it not working perfectly and started to have some of these feelings that Carrie referenced, you know, am I okay? Does my body work? And I finally went to see my doctor, and I said I wanted to get an ultrasound because I had so much stress in my belly. I thought I had, you know, an ulcer or cancer. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, you've known me forever, Cheryl. I rarely go to the doctor. So for me to go in and say, I think something, you know, there's this knot in my stomach. Well, there was nothing wrong. And I did have an ultrasound, and there was nothing wrong. But the practitioner was holistically inclined, and she looked at me and she said, "You know, you're fine. You're." And she reframed it for me to relax, to trust. And I left that appointment, and something happened to me, and I realized that I was saying, "I want to be pregnant. I want to be pregnant," versus, "Baby, would you like to come?" Mm-hmm. And I wrote a letter that night, a letter of invitation. Where rather than saying, I want to be pregnant, that I wanted to do this, I said, dear baby, this is who I am, this is who my husband is, this is what our life is. If you would like to join us, we would welcome you. And it was a long letter, you know, over a page detailed description of who we were, what we were about, and that was October 17th. And I have to say that on October 18th, I conceived my first child.
Mm-hmm. That's really, beautiful. Really beautiful story, and it also speaks to something that Brandy and I touched on in our interview, which is the idea of trying to control the process. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like something very deep in you let go and surrendered. And again, women can hear that and say, "Oh, I just need to let go and surrender." And Brandy and I talked about
that.
Write a letter. Write a letter, and that'll do it. And it's, you know, and even if you do surrender, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, A equals B and it's this equation.
Absolutely.
That will just happen. But that's a really, really beautiful story, and I think speaks to that point very well. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Good. Let's move on to the next area of expectations, which is and all of you, please feel free to chime in. This is about the experience of pregnancy and how our culture sets up quite a bit of fantasy, quite a bit of illusion about women thinking, you know, creating the expectation that you're going to love being pregnant in a nutshell. And many women do love being pregnant, and many, many women don't, and they struggle. And it's hard, and there are physical challenges, and there are emotional challenges. And yet we don't really see that. That's not an image that is transmitted in the mainstream media anywhere. You know, you see a magazine and on the cover, whether even you know, wonderful in-touch counterculture magazines, still, the pregnant woman is gorgeous and shining and glowing, and you always hear you're going to be glowing when you're pregnant, and you're going to feel so wonderful. And I grew up hearing that. I grew up hearing my mom talk about how she loved being pregnant, and, you know, she never felt better, and I just naturally assumed that would be me. And almost from the beginning, I mean, maybe I had a couple of weeks of, you know, being giddy and high and excited, And then it was morning sickness, which was not morning sickness. It was 24-hour-a-day sickness. Mm. And it was 9 weeks of pure and total on my hands and knees, begging for help, hell. And then that relieved, and then it was back pain. And the body that I had always known to be fluid and free and easy was a challenge. Just walking from my car to my door was hard. And then it was heartburn. And then there were all the emotional issues. I was estranged from my mother throughout my pregnancy. I had recently lost my grandmother. My cat, my beloved cat of 18 years, died in my first trimester, and there was so much grief. Just so much immense grief around the loss of mother, grandmother, cat, really strong feminine female presences in my life, and how that affected my pregnancy, and how there was no place to really talk about that. You know, the dominant model, even in the alternative world, is really about don't stress. Again, it's, you know, don't stress, you're going to create a toxic environment for your baby. And yet what happens when we don't acknowledge the grief and the fear of, you know, what am I going to be like as a mother and will I like it? And all of these very normal fears that pretty much every woman feels at some point, they get suppressed because we're told you're not supposed to feel that way and you should be so happy and joyous. And, you know, maybe you manage to block it for your pregnancy and then it comes out either during the birth itself or post-baby. And that's a lot of why we see postpartum depression. It's in that empty time when you're not running and busy and buying strollers and car seats anymore, and you're just with your baby in that endless space, 24-hour baby time, when everything that you thought you weren't supposed to feel comes crashing down over you. And so, you know, a lot of my work, I'd say most of it, is about making room for whatever a woman is feeling and addressing those expectations, the expectations with partner, if you're in a partnership, how you're expecting your husband to behave as a new father. And these are things that everyone carries, and we don't always know it until we sit down and take the time to ask ourselves the questions. What are my expectations? You know, and this is a lot of what I offer in the Birthing a New Mother Home Study course are, you know, questions for each stage, preconception, first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, birth, fourth trimester, the first 3 months of new motherhood, and then the first year. Because we often don't even know what questions we're supposed to be asking to bring out, to excavate these feelings that can so easily go underground in a culture that's telling you what you should be feeling, what you're supposed to be feeling. So that's, you know, that's my piece of this call, is about pregnancy. If any of you three would like to join in, chime in, please feel free to do so.
Well, for me, I too was, this is Carrie speaking. I was so sick for 15 weeks for me, and it was every moment of the day. And it was an experience unlike anything I have had up until that point, and actually since then. I mean, it was probably the most challenging 15 weeks of my life. Mm-hmm. And I, from the beginning, because I was so happy to be pregnant after such a long time of trying, I saw this as the first initiation into motherhood. Mm-hmm. And I held that as the container for what I was going through. And it was very helpful. It kept it in a perspective because I knew it was the first of many, many challenges that I would face. Mm. And there was something about that context that helped me to go through it.
Mm. Thank you. And Carrie and I actually conceived on the same day, if you can believe it. Tells you how deeply connected we are and our kids. And Carrie brought that context to me, so we were sick at the same time. She brought that context of viewing this as a transition, as a rite of passage, as an initiation. She brought the word initiation to me, and it too for me was like, oh, it was the only thing that helped me manage it. It wasn't the saltines or the ginger or the, you know, preggy pops. It was having that spiritual window, spiritual context. Mm-hmm. To hang on to was really a lifeline, understanding that it was, there was a deeper meaning. you know, and to walk through it was to begin the process of becoming a mother. It didn't just exist in a vacuum, but that it was important and it was meaningful and that it would prepare me in some way for motherhood. And it did, you know, looking back on that and the endurance that it required and the patience it required. And the other thing that helped, you know, on a spiritual level was connecting to gratitude. You know, knowing that as sick as I was, it wasn't because I was going through chemotherapy for cancer. It was because I was had the privilege of housing a miracle, and that the sickness was a result of a miracle. And sometimes that's the way it goes in life. You know, the degree of the divine is a degree of the challenge, you know, and vice versa. And so that was very helpful, and a resource that I, again, did call upon and continue to call upon as a mother is what the effect, the real cellular, physiological effect that connecting to gratitude has, that it can literally change such a intensely painful physical experience. So, again, that bridge, the mind-body bridge. So thank you very much, Carrie, for bringing that in. And Carrie and I also go into quite a bit of depth about that in one of our interviews in the program.
I would add one thing, Cheryl.
Yes, please.
Which is, as these things happen during pregnancy where you want to participate in the life you're accustomed to and you find yourself unable because you are too tired or because you have heartburn or because you cannot move that quickly, and you start to feel these feelings that happen for women in that moment of, but I want to take the dance class I've always taken, or I want to take the yoga class with my favorite instructor. I don't want to take the prenatal class, you know, and I want to go to this concert. I don't have a baby yet. I want to stay up late and be with my husband and be out. As this war starts to come up and this tug and pull is to notice that this is the beginning of the transition to being a mother. And that if you can start to step into it, rather than just resent the limitations, starting to reframe them as, oh, I'm starting to be a mother now. I have the baby on the inside, not on the outside, but some of my duties or obligations to mother this child are starting now.
Beautiful.
Exactly. And so what we're both saying is it's having a context for the experience that you're going through.
Exactly. And viewing all of it as preparation. So we have this belief in our culture. It's another expectation where we say you can't prepare for motherhood. It's impossible. Mm. You know, you're never going to know what it is to have a baby in your arms. And while that's true, that is the very statement on which my whole program and my conscious motherhood work is based, and to say that's not actually entirely true, because when you view morning sickness, when you view the limitations, when you view everything that comes up as a challenge during pregnancy as an opportunity to start to lay the foundation for your birth as a mother, it does make the transition significantly easier. It's not a shock anymore. It doesn't mean it's always easy on the other side. It doesn't mean you won't grieve. It doesn't mean you won't have challenges. But you will have laid the foundation because you had approached preconception, fertility challenges, pregnancy, all of it from this mindset. So it's a matter of shifting the mindset so you view it in a context of meaning and with the ability to prepare you, that this is what prepares you. Nature is perfect, you know, and it's no accident. And that's not to say you can't prepare if you adopt a baby, and that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, if you go about it this way, these are the stepping stones that can absolutely prepare you for the shock and temper the shock of motherhood. Thank you both so much for chiming in. Those are excellent points. And let's move on to birth, giving birth, childbirth, and Brandy, we're going to start with you. Again, our culture sets us up for so many false expectations. And when it comes to birth, we either see birth as a horror movie or a Hallmark card. Those are the diametric opposite images that we receive. What do you think the dominant messages are our culture transmits, and how can we give women a more realistic expectation?
Yes. This question is great. It's definitely got me thinking, and when I've been racking my brain and searching my soul for this, there are many things our culture says about birth, hypnotizes us to believe, but one of the things that really keeps coming up for me is this idea. You know, I work with parents before they give birth, and then I also do workshops after women have given birth. It's called Birth Story Medicine, and it's kind of talking to women, processing, reframing births where they had unwished for events. So I kind of get my take from talking to these women and seeing, like, where didn't they feel prepared, and where did they feel like I was lied to or I wasn't educated. And the thing that seems to keep coming up is this idea that birth is not anything really special. It's more of a medical event, and really the biggest piece of this is that it can be managed and controlled. Mm. So what I see happening is, you know, women saying, their doctors and care providers kind of saying, you know, don't worry, we can, you know, if you go, if you're late, we can induce. You know, if you don't want to feel the pain, we can give you an epidural. This kind of a thing. And so women feel like, oh, well, I can go through this, but I really don't have to feel all the stuff I'm scared about, because there's ways to manage that. But regardless, if you have the strongest epidural on the planet, if you birth by cesarean, you are still the one that has to do it. And birthing a baby, whether it's vaginally or by cesarean, it carries with it the hugest, I'm going to venture to say, the hugest life transformation. Mm-hmm. And it calls upon skills that you may have never needed or used before. So basically, in a nutshell, birth will blow your mind, whether you're doing it naturally with an epidural or by cesarean. And I think women don't expect that. I think that they are hypnotized to believe that they can get through it with disconnecting, whether it's the pain or however they can disconnect. Like, have you ever had women say to you, you know, who are pregnant, say, when you talk to them about preparation, they kind of say, like, oh, but I love my OB. My OB is so great.
Yes.
And you think to them, and you maybe say it, maybe you don't, is, your OB doesn't birth your baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are the one that births your baby. And I think the thing, too, is to make a more realistic expectation is to know that for most women, when you give birth, there will be a moment, if not many, many, many moments of, I didn't sign up for this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this thing that you've never experienced anything like this before. And if it's a second or a subsequent baby, this birth, you've never experienced this birth before. So to think, A, that you can step out of it and that your OB will just handle it,
mm-hmm.
Is not realistic. And to think that you can get through it and come out and go, yeah, that was pretty much like I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not going to happen. So I think people being realistic, I think, looks like accepting, okay, this is a rite of passage I'm about to go through. A human being is going to pass through me, however that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, literally, that is otherworldly. That is not, you know, that's not a knee surgery. This is a life that is, you know, being brought on this side. It's just that it has so much in it, and it's such an intense thing. And I feel like it's not treated like that, and it's just kind of a, you know, oh, I can get through it. The body's meant to do it. And, yeah, the body is meant to do it, but our mind likes to get in the way of our body. And if we don't explore these things before we go into labor, you know, it's it can make for your body to not be able to do the stuff that you want it to do. So that's my take on it.
Very, very, very important and so well said. And, you know, just to recap, we give women the notion that they don't really have to take responsibility for their birth, especially, I think, in the medicalized world. But you know, probably somewhat in home births as well, that if you're with the right person, they will handle it. And my OB's so great, and my midwife's so great. And so there's this handing over of responsibility and this handing over of authority and this, you know, sort of a denial that we encourage women to go into that says, well, I'm just going to get an epidural, I'll be fine, you know, mm-hmm. or I'm scheduling a C-section, I'll be fine. Even if that's what you choose to do, what you're saying is that there are still massive areas of feeling out of control, of it not going how you expect it to be, the epidural not being what you expect, or the C-section not being what you expected.
And even on the other end, sorry to interrupt you, even
go
on
ahead.
The other end, you know, it's also, I think we think, oh, the medicalized, you know, version of birth, that's the evil here, and that's the thing that we want to, you know, that we want to talk about. But I would also argue that it can be on the other end. I've had so many people come through my classes who are planning a magical, lovely home birth, and
mm-hmm.
it's beautiful, and yes, and I'm on board with all of that, totally. But even that side of it can also lack the realistic nature of birth.
Yes.
And it's like the same, it's the same outcome can sort of happen. If you have a woman who is like, well, all I need to do is I need to visualize, and, you know, I really believe in natural birth. Our body was meant to do it, and I'm strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I'm going to visualize, and I've got my candles and my playlist, and it's, you know, it's Enya. It's going to be amazing, you know, this whole thing. Even that expectation of that woman, I have had many of these women come into my birth story medicine classes who say, it didn't cut it. My
yes.
visualizing didn't cut it. There were deeper things that I didn't know I was going to feel.
Yes.
And I've even had women say, I feel like I was lied to by my support system, because they kept, when I would, you know, when they would bring up things about, I'm scared that, what if I can't do it? Instead of people saying to them, well, let's talk about this.
Right.
Well, what are some things that you can think of, and let's talk together, and how, what are some coping, you know, coping mechanisms, coping techniques, but instead say, oh, you're going to have the most beautiful birth ever. I just know it. And and so it's like on that end, I feel like it creates this expectation on that end, and then also on the other highly medicalized end. There's such a middle ground that would serve all, you know, the home birth crowd and the medical crowd. That middle ground would have them be so much more prepared for however their route's going to go. Because birth is universal. And so regardless of how, if you're home birth, if you're medical, however, you're still going through the same transition. And there are universalities there that I think need to be recognized.
Mm. So important, you know, and the theme of today's class and really all of my work is about, you know, as I said, it's not about stuffing the fear and stuffing the
yeah.
grief. That's what the culture tells you to do. In whatever model you're working in, whether it's the alternative home birth natural or the medical, it's really, you know, a lot of it tends to be the same about just visualize a happy birth, but then you're stuffing the fear, you know.
Yeah.
And so
can I add something to this?
Yes, please.
The people that come to me often come to me when they're trying to get pregnant, and I have seen now that there are patterns that happen. So the work that it takes for one to see what might be blocking a person from becoming pregnant is the same piece that's going to show up in the birthing process if it's not dealt with, which can prevent a body from opening up and
yes.
and actually birthing the baby, which is the same piece that will show up when you're at some point when you have a child, whether your child's 6 months old or 4 years old. They're the same pieces that come, they're the same pieces or the same patterns that come that block us from opening to whatever the experience is presently. So the experience may be trying to get pregnant. The experience may be trying to birth our baby naturally, or however, whatever the idea is of how you want to have that experience. And I just think deeply ingrained in all of us are these powerful family beliefs and rules, messages, attitudes, patterns of behavior that influence every step of this process.
Mm.
Yes, the births do not happen in a vacuum. It's not just on this day, these circumstances. What I talk about with my clients is it's like when we come to a birth, whether it's the doctor, the midwife, the doula, the nurse, whoever, the mother, the father, we all bring with us, if you can imagine, like a trail of colors behind us of all the things we've seen or haven't seen, believed or not believed about birth, about women. And we bring it with us. And so it's like on that day, it's not just those little incidences. It's the colors that all of us together make that then bring the situation. So I think women can come to it and think, well, you know, it's so easy to medicalize and look at it afterwards and go, well, in 2 hours, I was only 1 centimeter and blah, blah, blah. But there's so much more. And there's just a story that kind of reminded me of this. I think, was it Carrie, were you the one that just spoke?
Yes.
Like what you were talking about, the same issue that people come with, the same blockage perhaps, shows up later. I had this woman I was working with, and when she gave birth, she's a very like private woman, very immaculate, and she's a super sweetheart. But she had this way about her that was very private, and so she had chosen to birth at a hospital, but she wanted a doula, and she didn't want an epidural, and she wanted to try to go naturally. So what I found interesting about the situation was that she got stuck at about 7 or 8 centimeters. And the piece of the puzzle that, you know, that I just find interesting is that at that time her water had broken, and she was wearing like a full-on robe, and she was still wearing panties at 8 centimeters because she brought 2 extra pairs in case they got dirty. So, and I know this gets to more philosophical, but what I think is so interesting is I would venture to say or explore this idea of not being able to be seen or open and this needing to be covered possibly had something to do with the stalling. Now, you know, who knows, and it's not really worth anything to go back and look at why and all those kind of things. But exactly what you're saying, like this issue was not possibly the baby's presentation or you know, when her water broke. This is something that could have possibly been a bigger issue for her about really opening, you know. And I think, and if we're also talking about you know, kind of how society portrays it and everything with birth, I think this idea of really being open and what does that mean on so many levels, I think would be helpful. Like I was joking with another Birthing From Within mentor, and I said jokingly, but I sort of believe it was, I think one of the greatest things we could do in a class is to all strip down totally naked and take a poop in front of each other.
I did a class like that once. not quite to that extreme.
But there is something, that aspect, that being really open and being unembarrassed and, you know, like the real true essence of being open, being able to be your human animal nature in front of people is a huge piece to the opening. And I loved, Carrie, how you were talking about all of that. So that's my
Can I add something? I think with that image that Brandy just mentioned, this is Jessica speaking, it is a great image. And I think that one thing that could help women prepare more accurately for the birth experience is that you as a birthing mother are going to go to a raw and vulnerable and animalistic point somewhere in that process. And most women don't want to think of themselves as connected to the animal kingdom. But when you're giving birth, you are connected to this rite of passage that is template carrying down from our ancestors of the body opening and giving birth. And I think that what is challenging is that there's one woman giving birth, and she is going to this place where the veil is the thinnest it ever is between the worlds. You're bringing, as was mentioned on this call, a baby from the inside to the outside. And what's challenging is that no one else in the room is doing that. So whether you have one person or 7 people checking on you, they are all still in the regular pulse of life. And you are being slowly, bit by bit, dropped deeper, deeper, deeper to this alter reality where the veil is very thin and you're still having to communicate to the outside. And I don't think women are truly prepared for the vulnerability, like the true vulnerability of a woman in that state. And when you are on the veil and you're that close and you don't have your words and you can't even open your eyes, and yet you still have to communicate, get a lifeline out to the outside because there's something you need. I don't think women are prepared for that level of vulnerability and that level of inability to perhaps communicate effectively to get your needs met.
That's absolutely, and that's like on the other side, when I talk to women who are, you know, who've had some trauma, and some women will say, you know, I was so surprised because I'm so independent, I'm so put together, I feel like I'm smart, and in that moment I wasn't able to ask for what I wanted or what I needed. And, you know, and so it's our job as educators, and I think just as women in a society, to, you know, to tell women who are going into this, they're exactly like what you said. There might be times when you can't say the words that you want to say. You know, this talking about this thin veil, it's such a beautiful way to think about it. And that's where I feel like when I was saying that it feels like it's nothing special, is that these doctors and midwives and doulas have all seen these births, you know, seen them birth after birth. But mm-hmm. you as the woman have never been in the seat of being the birthing mother. This, you know, unless it's subsequent births, but for a first-time mom, I mean, that's the rocking your world with birth. That's just, you know, to even just tell somebody that, I think allows them to know, okay, there's going to be surprises in this thing, and I'm really kind of, this is like I'm taking a bite, you know, in the Alice in Wonderland, and I'm just I don't know what I'm in for, but I know whatever it is, it's going to be huge, and hopefully I've set up a great support system.
Right. Right. Fabulous, all of you. So rich and important information. Even just this conversation itself helps to create a different set of expectations, because it's not a conversation that people hear very often. So I hope that this is continuing to be helpful for all of you listening, you know, all of these wonderful mentors offering this reassurance and this valuable information, just as you all did in the Birthing a New Mother Home Study course.
Hi, this is Carrie. I just wanted to add that if any of you are pregnant as you're listening to this call, I encourage you to spend the remaining time of your pregnancy looking at what might come up that would interfere from letting go, because that's really what we're talking about, whatever it is that might get in the way of you letting go on the deepest level. And that really is the internal work of the pregnancy, or one of the pieces of the work.
Mm-hmm. And again, to, you know, recap what you said before and what the crux of my work is, it's not just about letting go so that you can have, you know, a certain kind of labor, but it's really the work of motherhood.
At every stage.
So, at every stage.
Yes.
As we all know.
The knowing laugh.
Well, yeah. You know, and it's not something you learn how to do and then you're done. It is the process, the ongoing learning, richness process of being a mother, is learning how to let go. So, you know, as much as you can do during pregnancy, and please, please heed Carrie's advice and look at that. Whatever you don't do, it's not to berate yourself or beat yourself up over the head, oh, I should have done more work, because you will have 1,000, if not more, opportunities to look at the places where you are holding on, where you're tight inside, where you're trying to control. You know, I can look back at my birth and say, oh, I should have done work about grieving. You know, but my mother wasn't there. I got stuck at 9.5 centimeters, and I know that extra half, I just didn't, I couldn't let go. Didn't know how to let go and become a mother without my mother in my life. And there was just, I didn't know how to go through that portal, you know, without my mother around me. We have since healed, and she was actually at the birth of my second child, which was so beautiful and so meaningful. But could I have done more work? Probably. Had I done more work, would it have changed that experience? I'll never know, you know. So, again, it's this fine line between doing the work that needs to be done and also knowing that no matter how much you do, there's always going to be more to do, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can't control any of it, really. You can only open your eyes as wide as they'll go, and then there's always more to do. So I just want to take a little break from the teaching before we go into first year of motherhood with Jessica and talk a bit about my program. If you've been watching my free training videos and reading about my home study program, you know a bit about what this is about. What is this program? It is 8 downloadable lessons, each of which includes articles, MP3 interviews, videos, and a journaling module, in which I provide you with the essential questions you need to be asking at each stage. The program is self-paced, so you can listen to each lesson as you enter that stage of your transition or go back and review as needed. Once you sign up for the program, it's delivered all at once. It won't be delivered weekly because everyone's at a different stage of their transition. So lesson 1 begins with an overview of the transition as well as a bonus video on managing anxiety. and it's anxiety that comes up at any stage. You can watch in my Birthing a New Mother page, you can watch a video in which Brandy is actually the short clip from my interview with her, which is in lesson 2 on preconception. That page is birthinganewmother.com/video-4. In lessons 3 through 5, I take you through a roadmap of each trimester of pregnancy, going deeper into all of the topics that we've touched on today. And if you've crossed over the birth threshold and are a newborn mother, lessons 5, 7, and 8 will provide you with the support and guidance to begin finding your mother legs. In lesson 7, there's an interview with Sonia Basto, who's a postpartum doula here in Boulder. I asked her what her core message is to new moms, and she said, it's okay to grieve. It's okay to grieve. So, you know, these are the kinds of nuggets you will receive in the program. In addition to these 8 lessons, you will also receive email support from me. I receive dozens of emails each week from people in transitions, but I give priority to people that are in my courses and my clients. I will personally be responding to you within 48 hours. And there are also several bonus videos that I've included. The first is an interview with Carrie on the Mind-Body-Fertility Connection. The second is an exclusive 15-minute audio meditation called Opening During Labor, which is generously offered by Jessica Williams. And the third is a video called Breathing, Meditating, and Inner Bonding, and that's where I share the tools for alleviating anxiety. So, and just a heads up, there's 2 more days to receive the discounted price of $197. After that, it will increase by $77. And this is truly the only program I'm aware of that will help you manage your anxiety, calm your pregnancy fears, and help you prevent postpartum depression. So truly prepare you for the transition of becoming a mother. Again, it's birthinganewmother.com/video-4. So let's get back to this class. I'm going to pose the same question for Jessica Williams from Love Parenting. One of the predictors of anxiety and depression during transitions is having realistic expectations. Our culture sets us up for so many false expectations, and when it comes to the first year of motherhood, we either carry an expectation that it's going to be postpartum depression or a Huggies commercial. What do you think the dominant messages are that our culture transmits, and what can more realistic expectations be?
Thank you for the question. And since this class is called What Nobody Tells You to Expect, I thought I would tell you a couple things that you might expect, and then it won't be such a shock if this happens.
Great.
Because if some things are not easy in new motherhood, the shock of it not going the way you thought it would go can absorb so much of your mental space that you can't even attend to the issue at hand.
Yes.
So we'll start with something that is rarely talked about and very, very upsetting to experience, which is you might not bond with your baby right away. And you aren't, I don't think anyone's ever prepared you for that thought, that you might look at your baby and recoil. You might not feel in love with them. They might not feel familiar to you. They might not look cute to you. And it's shocking if this happens, because it's your baby and you want to love them. But you're looking at this baby now, couple this with colic and they're crying and you can't soothe them, your whole inner world can start to crumble, because you wanted to be pregnant so badly. You got pregnant. You carried to term. You gave birth, whether it was the birth of your dreams or a difficult birth. You have your baby, and now you might feel unattached to them. You might feel disengaged and disconnected from this baby. So that's one thought I want to give you, so that if this occurs, you'll know this isn't permanent. This is a moment, and you will get through it. You will fall in love with your baby. You will learn to love your baby, and your baby will continue to grow. They'll be your child, and your relationship will develop and richen. The second thing that might happen is you might have trouble with breastfeeding. And you might have some awareness that that's a possibility, because you've heard of lactation consultants and you know that there is La Leche League and there's these organizations set up to help you. but the experience of having your very hungry baby at your breast and not feeling that you're able to feed your child can really send you into a tailspin and bring up feelings of grief, of despair, of self. You can question your self-worth as a mother. You can question your ability to mother. What's happened to some friends and clients is they have trouble breastfeeding, and then they start to think, well, if I can't feed my baby, then how else am I going to be able to take care of my child? Will I have the skills later on? And you're so vulnerable because you have a newborn. It's the first days. You know you need to nurse them right then if you can, and it can be real debilitating. So just having that awareness that breastfeeding might be difficult, even if you have wonderful breasts that you love, that you feel will be able to do this thing. Sometimes this happens. You flood and there's too much milk and the baby's choking, or you can barely express any milk and you feel that your baby is starving. Couple this with some doctor visits and they're telling you that your baby's not getting enough weight, it can be very stressful. So there are a few things you can do for these various problems in the moment that can help you get through these difficulties if they occur. And I will speak to that, but I'm just trying to lay out some of the possibilities first. Another thing that can happen is the sleep deprivation. And this is alluded to. There's books on sleep. There's websites dedicated to sleep. A lot of people roll their eyes and say, oh, yeah, you won't sleep at all. But again, the actual experience of being sleep deprived, sleep deprivation is a form of torture. I mean, it's a biological, physiological experience that has real effects on your ability to function during the day. So as the days go on and you're waking up, if you have a baby that's waking up every hour or every couple hours, which is common and is part of the baby's wiring system to get their needs met because they're wired for their red alert. Little infants wake up every 3 hours. So if you're waking up every 3 hours or more every hour, this can add up to sleep deprivation, and this can be shocking to the new mother, how it actually feels to do night after night, week after week, potentially month after month, potentially year after year of not getting your own physical sleep needs met. And another expectation that I might let you know about is that you might feel disinterested or disconnected from your partner. And this can be shocking as well because you're in love with your partner. You want to get married. You want to have a baby. You have the baby, and suddenly you're not that interested in him. And this can be upsetting for him and unsettling for you because you want to include him in this experience. You want to feel bonded as a family. And yet, for some reason, you're feeling like you really want nothing to do with him. And again, there's a reason for this. You have hormones that are changing in response to having given birth and in response to lactating, and it's physiologically connecting you to your baby, and it's there's actual reasons that this is happening. But it's hard to grasp how it really feels to look at your partner and not really care if he's in the room. And this can be shocking to the whole family system. Mm-hmm. So while there are some remedies to these problems, the not bonding with your baby, one simple idea is to wear your baby, to have your baby close, because the physicality will start to bridge to the emotional connection. And there's an idea for sleep deprivation, which is you are you can sleep with your baby. You know, you might have heard that, sleep when your baby sleeps, and they're saying that so that you actually catch up on nighttime sleep during the day just as your baby does. And for trouble with breastfeeding, I would definitely recommend that you create a relationship with lactation support before you have your baby so that you've done that research and you've met someone just at their office. You know you have that number to call so that if you get in that situation, you don't have to go through the researching, the finding, the office hours, seeing if you have the connection. You have someone already in line that can help. And for the partner, in the moment, you can, this is a preventative for that, is that you can write a letter before you have your baby about why you appreciate your partner and just keep that in your journal by your bedside table, and you can read it once you have your baby to remind yourself of these points of connection. So, yes, there are things that you can do in the moment to help with some of these problems, but they won't solve them completely. And as the crux of Cheryl's work is looking at your expectations to arm you with the knowledge that you need to bring your expectations in line so that if some of these things are challenging, at least you've been prepared on some emotional and spiritual level that it might look like this.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Great. I just want to add to that, and I'm sure Carrie and Brandy might have something to say as well, which is to remind yourself, anyway, you're on this call, you're listening, you've heard it once now, but it's so essential that if you find yourself challenged by any or all of those experiences as a new mother, to remind yourself that it doesn't mean that you're not meant to be a mother. You know, that's where the devastation point comes in. Jessica mentioned that as well, that it doesn't mean you're a failed mother. It doesn't mean that if you don't have enough milk or too much milk or whatever the situation might be, or you don't bond with your baby, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, your capacity to mother, your ability to nurture and take care of this child. And that's where it crosses over from a normal, extremely normal experience of new motherhood to potentially postpartum depression, you know, where it can go down a slippery slope, because it's what happens in your mental state as you form assumptions and draw inaccurate conclusions based on a normal experience that you don't really know is normal, because a lot of people don't talk about it.
I think that's essential, an essential reminder. And I would add that just because you're having this experience, if you have any of these experiences from preconception, pregnancy, birth to new motherhood that we've mentioned, it doesn't mean they're permanent. You can have this experience and then you can move through it, and it doesn't necessarily going to be your experience throughout motherhood.
Yes. Absolutely. And all of those experiences are finite, and it's important to remind yourself of that as well. You will get through the breastfeeding challenges, or you'll decide to bottle feed, which, you know, whatever you decide, but you will feed your child.
Yes.
You know, you will bond with your child. You will reconnect with your partner. You know, these are finite experiences, and to remind yourself of that, you know, I think that was actually going back to the challenge of morning sickness. Both Carrie and I, knowing that it would end at some point, was incredibly reassuring.
More likely praying.
Yeah, praying.
And I think that point that you just said, you will feed your child, is essential. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get into, what are my expectations of feeding my child? What are my assumptions? Do I have an assumption in place that if I can't breastfeed, I'm not a good mom and I'm not taking care of my child? Because if you can handle that assumption and move through it to the other side, that the core is, I'm going to feed my child.
Mm-hmm.
However that needs to happen, I can
mm-hmm.
breastfeed, I can use the tube that comes down at the nipple, running formula through, but still giving the experience of being at the breast,
mm-hmm.
or I can use a bottle. And all three of those are feeding my child, and that's the essential point of that area.
Can I add something here, you guys? It's Brandy.
Yes, please, Brandy.
This is all, I love this. I wish I had heard this before. We probably all wish we had heard this before
mm-hmm.
we had our children. I just wanted to speak to an experience that I had that's kind of on the same lines. I didn't realize it, but when I had my son, I had a whole list of how it should be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was subconscious. It wasn't anything I ever wrote out. But I had a good friend who did everything in my mind the right way. She was totally natural. She had such a patience that I found out later I didn't have, and that's why it didn't quite work for me. But so I had all these subconscious things that I was stuck to being in a certain type of camp, and I was like, attachment parenting or die. That's like,
mm-hmm.
this is the best, and this is what I will do. And so I basically lost my mind. I don't know at what month it totally happened, but I think around like month 6 or 7, I was trying to do everything perfectly and most natural and most right. And I had a son who basically wanted to nurse and be at my nipple all day and all night. So around 6 or 7 months, I finally was losing it. And I came to my husband and I said, I was frantic. And I said, we need to do something. I feel like we need to try the pacifier. I need an out. I need something, because this is not working for me. I just need a little bit of a break. And my wonderful, well-intended, beautiful husband says to me, but won't that interfere with your nursing relationship? Which was my fear all along,
right,
which is why I didn't want to do it.
Right.
So instead of me being able to realize, oh, thank you for caring about the thing you think I care about, but I'm actually going to need to actually do this. What I did is he said that to me, and I went, oh, my God, you're right. I can't believe I was so selfish to jeopardize that. And I slunked back into my mothering cave and continued to have a baby on me 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that was, and later I really realized it, but to me, that was me waving a huge white flag about something that was just, this wasn't a moment where I could, I was at my breaking point. And so I think for women to know, realize these moments when you're at your breaking point, when, you know, and I mean, I know it can feel like during the day, maybe there's many of these moments, but if you really talk to yourself, not the frantic, stressed, you know, feeling like a failure self maybe in that moment, but really take a moment and visualize and go in and say, is this working for me? What are my expectations of this? What does doing what I'm doing mean about me? What do I think it means about me? And then what is my other choice that I think I want to do? What do I think that means about me? And am I right about those things? Mm-hmm. So I think to really go inside and be able to do that is a helpful thing. So I tell my parents in my classes, you know, moms, look for your real, true white surrender flags, and dads, look for them too, because, mm-hmm. you know, to validate her, had I said that to my husband and him saying back to me, wow, I can see that you are struggling and that you need a break. Okay, let's talk about ways we can get you a break. And a pacifier might not have even been the thing, but we might have been able to brainstorm together. So to really watch where, what camp we think we want to be a part of, and when it's not working, the flexibility of maybe shifting what we thought was the right way.
And what I would add to that is to begin to look at what is your relationship to your entitlement to having your own needs. Because mm-hmm. If you as a mother go underground and don't allow yourself to have your needs, this too will be another pattern that shows up over and over again as a parent.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep, and what I would add to that is such an important point, and Brandy, you and I also talk about it in our interview in greater detail, but regarding how challenging it is to trust yourself as a mother, and self-trust being one of the cornerstones of the mother identity, knowing that your way might be different than you thought it was going to be. Because as you're saying, well, maybe you didn't have the patience to do 24-hour breastfeeding. Maybe somebody else does, and that doesn't make somebody else a better mother. But I think one of the dangers, and we've all talked about this individually, I've talked about this with each of you, of the attachment parenting model, as beautiful as it is that it's not always a match, you know, and it doesn't always work, and there's some judgment attached to it that if you don't do it that way, you're screwing up your kid, basically, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, with regard to sleep deprivation, for example, it may be the right choice to put the baby in a crib instead of having the baby right next to you. Your baby might sleep better in a crib. And I've talked to many, many women for whom that's true who said, I had a fantasy and I so much wanted my baby to sleep right next to me, but she sleeps 12 hours in the crib, so what am I going to do, you know? And that may be the very best choice for you and your baby, and yet it flies in the face of the attachment parenting model. And so we put a lot of judgment on ourselves and a lot of pressure as mothers, especially in the natural mothering world, to do it just right, which means, you know, nursing on demand, which means co-sleeping, which means all of these things, which if it works for you, that's wonderful, and if it doesn't work for you, that's okay. What's more important as a mother is to follow a path that works for you. If you're nursing your baby on demand and you're resenting it every single time, mm-hmm. that's not going to serve your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will go right into your mother's milk, and that's what the baby will be ingesting. So, you know, that's just another look at how not nursing on demand could possibly very well be in everyone's highest good.
I have to add to this, this is Jessica, just as a mother of three children, that I've done different things with my three children and how that affects one's mother identity. So am I a mother that births in hospitals, or am I a mother that births at home? Because I've done both. Am I a mother that co-sleeps, or am I a crib mom? Because I've done both, you know, and starting to get fluidity around the parenting choices and how they define us. that I'm a mother now in this moment with this child today making this choice. And if we don't marry our choices to our identity, I think we'll have an easier time understanding it's a moment in time, it's a continuum. We can make different choices, and our mother identity will continue to grow and change. As Cheryl has spoken to, it's not a static identity. It's an identity that is fluid and constantly evolving, and our particular choices don't solely define us. Because you really might do it differently with your second child. And trust me, by your third, you might do a couple things differently too.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point. My brain is firing like a million miles an hour. But we are coming to the end of our time. Carrie or Brandy, do you have anything else you want to add to the conversation of early motherhood?
No, I don't. I'm so thrilled to just be a part of this conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah. The only thing I would add, just as for me to know when I was, like, how do you notice that you are maybe stuck in a certain way or whatnot, is the moment for me was I noticed that I had in my mind all the right ways to do it, and I was looking at friends and kind of like, well, that's not the attachment parenting. That's not the right way. Yet they were handling motherhood, like, far better than I was. So I was like, this isn't making sense. If I'm doing everything right, I should be the one that's sleeping and looking rested and having time and, you know, having energy for my baby. So that's a way maybe for some of the women who are going through it to kind of look around and see how they feel like they're doing.
And it's a great point. And doing it, quote unquote, right might not mean that you are well rested and all of that. You know, I mean, I had made a personal choice. I had a son who was up 10 to 14 times a night forever. And it was exhausting, and I knew in my soul searching that I wasn't going to let him cry it out. Now, whatever factors contributed to that decision, there may have been some unhealthy ones or dysfunctional ones, but in my deepest truth, that felt like the right path for me. And what that ended up creating was a very sleep-deprived mother, but I was okay with it. I wasn't resenting it, you know, but I've talked to many, many women for whom that's not the case. They're trying to stick with it, and it's simply not working, and the resentment and the exhaustion and the psychosis and the snapping and the irritation, it's simply not the best choice. So you may still be, you know, it may be that it's the right choice for you and you're still sleep, you're still exhausted, or you're still whatever, but it's really a moment of, you know, so individual for each mother to look at, where is this action coming from and do I need to make a different choice? And that's okay. It's okay if you choose to cry it out. It's okay if you choose to do a, you know, a not feeding on demand schedule, or some kind of, you know, feeding schedule. Yes, is that Brandy?
I think it comes down to,
Jessica,
it's not what you do, it's how you do it. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
And what's fueling that? It's the unconscious fueling your choice. So to have an understanding of what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. And
why you have to do it as an attachment parent.
Yes.
Just so that you understand the energy. You're downloading the energy of the unconscious into every choice you make. So to have an understanding of what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. So I want to open it up to some questions, and we also have some online questions. I have several wonderful questions that many of you have written in, and I know it takes a little extra courage to raise your hand, but we are all here to support you. So if you have a question, just press *2 and I will unmute you. Give people a few seconds to find their courage. If anybody online has a question, *2. Okay, so let's go into, and at any point if you want to *2, that's fine. We are already at an hour and 15 minutes, so I'm just going to sift through these questions that I've printed out from from the email box of this website. This question is for Jessica. This is about sleep deprivation. So I never imagined that sleep would be such an issue as a new mom. My son is 9 months old and still waking up several times a night and going crazy with sleep deprivation. I never thought I would let him cry it out. It doesn't feel natural to me, but I feel like I'm going to lose it. I know I'm not being a great mom. What would you suggest?
Well, thank you for the question, and this comes up a lot. I think you have to look into cry it out and understand that there's a continuum in that phrase and in that methodology, that there are levels between zero tears and crying it out for an hour in your room by yourself to hysteria and vomiting. And if you can start to understand that maybe some crying or it's not his first choice or okay, and understand your own limit, that's one thing. Another thing is to look at the support system and how can you get support within the co-parenting if you are in a co-parenting relationship, and maybe you can do shifts. Another thing to look at is the sleep arrangement. Sometimes you'll find that a baby is waking up a lot and they're in the crib, and if they are next to you or in a bassinet next to you or in a co-sleeper, they might wake up less. Sometimes it's converse. If they're in the bed or in the bassinet and the co-sleeper, they're waking a lot. And if they were to transition into a low bed on the floor or a bed in another room or the crib, the sleep pattern might change. Another thing I would say, number four, is look at your support during the day. So if you're having these challenges at night, you have to build in during the day support built in to nourish you during this very challenging time. And I have more ideas, but I know we are almost at the end of our call. Does anyone else want to weigh in? Or that person can email me, and I have several articles on sleep that I can forward to you.
Great. Give your email address.
Okay. LoveParentingLA, as in Los Angeles, @gmail.com. LoveParentingLA@gmail.com. Anyone can write me there, and like I said, I can link you to several of my articles that go into depth on sleep ideas.
Fantastic. And for anybody else who has questions for Carrie or myself or Brandy, you can find our emails on our websites. Again, Brandy's site is mothernurturedenver.com. Carrie's site is carriedenocounseling.com. And mine is conscious-transitions.com. You can also email me, Cheryl@consciousmotherhood.com, and I will be happy to connect you with any of these fabulous, fabulous women. So just to wrap up here, thank you all. Thank you so much, everyone who's joined us for this call. This has been so rich. I hope beneficial for you, helpful for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it via email, however you wish to respond. And I would love the opportunity to guide you further into your transition. Again, my home study course is birthinganewmother.com/video4. And I just want to let you know that it is truly my deepest passion to provide support, mentorship, guidance, accurate information for anybody in transition. My program comes with a full 100% money-back guarantee. At any point, if you're not satisfied, I return your full money, your full payment. And aside from the program itself, I am very available by email. Phone. I offer a 15-minute complimentary phone consultation, and I never want money to stand in the way of anyone receiving the help and the guidance that they need. So if you think the home study program is right for you but you can't afford it, please let me know that as well. Thank you so much, Carrie and Brandy and Jessica.
Oh, thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's really been a wonderful call. And we will now stop the recording.